Okay, another Sunday, huh? Pretty soon, 2026. Damn, where does it all go? So today I'm going to talk about something that's rather interesting. I'm going to talk about Bodhi Day. Anybody heard of Bodhi Day? Okay, well, this will be your introduction then. So we have something called Vaisakh, which celebrates the birth, enlightenment, and death of the Buddha, that by the lunar calendar, it's the full moon day of May. Bodhi Day is celebrating the enlightenment of the Buddha on December 8th. Now, why would we go from May to December to celebrate something that's pretty similar? It is because of a calendar change. In Japan, they went from the lunar calendar to the Gregorian calendar in 1862. And that's why Bodhi Day ends up on December 8th. So, what is Bodhi Day? It's celebrating the enlightenment of the Buddha. And the enlightenment of the Buddha is a rare occurrence. It only happens every once in a while. This Buddha is the 27th Buddha on Earth. And then we have, or he's the 28th Buddha on Earth. And then we have the next one already lined up. And so it's rare to have a Buddha. What distinguishes a Buddha from an arhat? An arhat is someone who studies the teachings of the Buddha and achieves nirvana. And it is the same nirvana as the Buddha. But the difference between a Buddha and an arhat is the Buddha did not have a teacher. When the previous Buddha died, Siddhartha Gautama was born on earth. Rediscovered the path to nirvana, practiced, and reached the fruition. He became a Buddha. And then for 45 years, he taught the paths to the end of suffering, to the end of karma, to the end of rebirth, and he called it nirvana. So this is what happened. It was a full moon night. He was in the forests of India, Nepal, in that area, and he sat down to meditate. And there's something called the three watches of the night. So the nighttime was dissected into three, and it said in the first watch of the night, he became aware of his past lives. Now, a lot of people look at that as going, well, what does that mean? I've never met anybody who validated past lives for me. I've heard people speaking about their past lives, but they were always sort of cool past lives, like princess or king or monarch, but they weren't, trash pickup people. They weren't working in the parks. In Buddhism, we have something called rebirth. So we're born time and time again. Now, in Hinduism, they have something called reincarnation, and they're born time and time again. And the difference between rebirth and reincarnation is rebirth does not require a soul. Reincarnation does. So the Buddha said, we may not have a soul. If you want one, that's cool, but that's not who you really are. And what migrates lifetime to lifetime in Buddhism is your karmic energy. So we create karma, what we think, what we say, and what we do. But he was able to look back at all his past lives and see how he progressed from each past life to the next one and ultimately became the Buddha in his last life. So Siddhartha Gautama celebrated his last life as a Buddha. And he died at the age of 80. And you might ask yourself, well, how did he die? And the answer is food poisoning. Now, it's not a profound way of passing out. You know, I mean, you know, you think about a special person dying and there's lights and radiation and people are crying and all that. Somebody offered him a meal, and it could have been mushrooms or pork, we're not sure. And he got food poisoning and he died. And can you imagine offering a meal to the Buddha? And then he dies because of the food you gave him, how you would feel. And the Buddha assured him, don't feel bad. You've given me a chance to end this lifetime. And now I can accept, realize nirvana after death, parinirvana. Now, the funny part for me is as he was dying, he called his monks. His monks were with him because they always travel together, and he called the monks around and said, I'm dying. Does anybody have a last question they'd like to ask before I go? And all the monks were silent. Nobody wanted to ask a question. And then he died. And then some of the monks said, well, I wonder what he would have said about this. I wonder what he meant when he said that. Of course, that's how it works. And after he died, a variety of schools of Buddhism arose, each saying this is what he meant. This is how he talked about it. So being able to look at your past lives is important in Buddhism, but that only happens in nirvana. And after he achieved nirvana and taught for 45 years, he was able to look at his students and see all their past lives. Now, can you imagine having a teacher that could share with you what you've done in all your past lives and what you need to do in your next lives to achieve nirvana? That'd be the best teacher you could ever have. So he left us with a legacy. He left us with a practice. He left us with something to do, the Buddhist path. Now, in the second watch of the night, he came to understanding karma and the Eightfold Path. Now, karma is really important on a couple levels. Number one, karma takes the place of a divine lawgiver. Now, we know that there is a deity that has defined right and wrong. And so we're supposed to follow the deity's instructions and not do the wrong and only do the right. But in Buddhism, we lack the divine lawgiver. And so karma is our guide. Karma says, depending on what you think, what you say, and what you do, you will either suffer more or suffer less. So we're not telling you have to do it, but we are telling you if you do it, you're going to suffer more. So we have something called the five precepts, which allows us to use our karma to benefit our life and the lives of others. And just a refresher on the five precepts: I will not take life. I will not take what is not given. I will not indulge in sexual misconduct. I will not tell unskillful words or lies. I will avoid becoming intoxicated. So that's a way of using karma in a skillful way to suffer less. And then we can use the five precepts to help others as well. The first level is it helps us. The second level, it helps others. And rather than not taking life, now we encourage life. Rather than not taking what is not given, now we practice generosity and giving. Now, instead of committing sexual misconduct, we now look at it as a way of showing love and kindness in a committed relationship. Now, instead of lying and telling gossip or idle chatter, we use our language to generate loving kindness to everybody that wants to speak with us and come into dialogue or conversation. And the last one, no more intoxicants. Now we practice abstinence from intoxicants, and we have much more clarity. Clarity is important if you're meditating. Okay, so that's how the karma thing works. And then we have the Eightfold Path. He became aware of the Eightfold Path. He was able to put into words what he had done. So really, if you look at the Buddha's teachings, he never told you what you should do. He always told you what he did. This is what I did. This is how I did it. And this allowed me to achieve nirvana. And if you want to achieve nirvana, you can follow what I did. But I'm not telling you you have to. You know, you may not be in that place in your life where you realize how valuable nirvana is. You may not understand that every lifetime you have been reborn, you've always suffered and died at the end. And then you've been reborn again. And then you suffered and then you died at the end. And at some point in all those lifetimes, you wake up to the fact that I never have to be reborn again if I achieve nirvana. So the Buddha did not teach us how not to die. The Buddha taught us how not to be reborn. And the Eightfold Path is what he did. Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And those eight path factors will allow you to realize nirvana. So we don't have to go anywhere. That's the deal. You don't have to move to India and join an ashram, because nirvana is a change of mind. It's not a change of place. And you will still have a sore back and bad knees, but you'll have a perfect consciousness. Very cool. And we realize, looking at the daily news, how rare perfect consciousness is. Now, in the third watch of the night, he realized that the Eightfold Path fit into the Four Noble Truths. Eightfold Path fits into the Four Noble Truths. And then he realized nirvana. Okay, so what are the Four Noble Truths? Number one, the first truth is, life is ultimately unsatisfactory. No matter how much money you have, or where you live, or how good you look, or what kind of car you drive, eventually life will become unsatisfactory. It might be misunderstood in that life is always unsatisfactory, but that's not the case. There are plenty of wonderful events that occur in everyone's life. But the problem with those events is they are temporary and subject to change without notice. And once they change, we are disappointed and we suffer. So anything that you look at eventually has the potential of turning into suffering. It sounds pessimistic, and if he had stopped there, it would definitely be pessimistic. But he continued. He said, I have figured out the reason why we suffer. And it's craving, it's attachment, it's clinging, it's wanting to push away the bad and hold on to the good. Those kind of desires that manifest in every human being ultimately creates our suffering. Then he said, I found the answer. The answer and the way to the answer is the Noble Eightfold Path. And the answer I found was nirvana. Now, he never went into great detail about what nirvana is. But there are some characteristics. Number one, when you achieve nirvana, you'll never have to suffer again. And if you achieve nirvana after death, it's called parinirvana. So when you achieve nirvana while you're alive and you die, you go into parinirvana, And he never explained what that is. So it's up to you to find out. And the only way you're going to find out is to achieve nirvana. The second aspect of nirvana is it ends your karma. You will not be able to create karma in the way you think, in the way you speak, in the way you act. But you are still subject to the consequences of the past karma. And there's a story about the Buddha and his cousin Devadatta, and Devadatta pushed his big boulder down a hill. And the boulder crashed into 1,000 pieces at the bottom of the hill, and one of the splinters cut the Buddha's foot. Now, it said you can't kill a Buddha, but you can wound a Buddha. And so that splinter wounded the Buddha's foot. And why did that happen? Because of some past karma in a past life. And the consequences were not eradicated when he achieved nirvana. And the third aspect is you'll never have to be reborn again. Now, most of us don't remember any of our rebirths, so it doesn't seem like a big deal. But if we follow Buddhism and follow the idea of afterlife, we have been reborn many, many times. And assuredly, we have suffered in each one of those lifetimes. And more importantly, we have died. And the church I spoke at last Sunday was the Pacific Unitarian Universalist Church in Palos Verdes, Rancho Palos Verdes. Beautiful church, very nice. Wonderful people. A lot of them are gray-haired. And every couple months, they gather at the church and have a death cafe. And what they talk about is death. They keep talking about death every couple months. Because it's inevitable. We're all going to find ourselves at death's door one day. And it's bound to open. Guaranteed to open. Come, join us. Join us with all the other dead people. Since the beginning of our planet, we have the animals, we have the humans, we have the birds, we've got all unbelievable. Everything dies. Right now, we've got 8 billion people on Earth. And in 100 years, almost all of them will be dead. And once that 8 billion dies, we'll probably have 9 billion after that. And then we may get into 10 billion. It's hard to keep those humans happy. They're only happy if they're procreating, enjoying. So, to digress a little bit, I gave a talk yesterday at Leisure World in Seal Beach. Bunch of gray-haired people there too. And we were talking about death. And I said, nobody dies well. And they were all surprised. What does that mean, that nobody dies well? Well, Ram Dass said, in the beginning of our life, we are in somebody training. We're training to be somebody. And in the end of our life, we're in nobody training. We are training to be nobody. So we can all die well. And what does that mean? That means that we have to do a little bit of work on self. Because self doesn't exist in the way we think it does. And there's something called the five aggregates that defines who we are. And more importantly, what we are. And none of them include a self. So what are the five aggregates? Number one, form. We have form. We all have form. And no two people have the same form unless you're a twin, but even then there are probably some differences. And when this form contacts the form in the world, something happens. Sensation. Pleasant sensation. Unpleasant sensation, neutral sensation. So we form sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness. And now we have form and sensation, which leads to perception, which is just the miracle of being a human being. Only humans have the kind of perception that we have. Only humans can construct the world completely in their head. That none of that stuff out there exists without it being in our head. And if we go unconscious rather than conscious, all that stuff disappears. We can't see it. We can't feel it. Can't touch it. So everything out there started in our head. Wow. Blows my mind. So we have form, sensation, perception, and now we have volition, which is the karmic activity of thinking, speaking, and acting. So our perception defines how we respond and relate to the world out there that's really in here. And we can like it, we can dislike it, we can find the magic, we can miss the magic. We can do a lot of things and react to it and respond to it. And that's how we know that we exist, because we're interdependent and we're relating to everything around us. Now that gives us the illusion of a person, the illusion of a self. And that's difficult to get rid of. And we shouldn't get rid of it. We need the self. It's limited, it's relative, it's not ultimate. But Ram Dass once said, you know, it's good to have spiritual experiences and see the bright lights and color flashing, but don't forget your zip code. Because we live in the relative reality of our everyday existence. And if we're lucky enough to find out how to meditate well, though there actually isn't a good meditation, it's just meditation, we can have different kinds of experiences and never quite look at that reality the same again. It's a bit more transparent. We see the interconnection and interdependence we have with it. We see that we can manipulate it by a variety of means. Fascinating, fascinating. So we have form, sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness. The last aggregate is consciousness. It should be looked at maybe as the first aggregate, but it's our awareness that all our life only works if we have a level of awareness. If we're not aware, nothing happens. Unconscious, even when we're sleeping, we have a sleeping consciousness. I know in my case, I like to dream. Sometimes they're in color. Sometimes there's discussion going on that sort of echoes through my head when I wake up in the morning. I'm going, wow. Great dream. But I had to be conscious to have that dream. So I was in my sleep consciousness rather than my waking consciousness. And those five things working together create who we are. But there's nobody there. There's nobody there. So what I started off saying, nobody dies well. We can practice being nobody. So when our last breath is about to happen, we can go into deep state of meditation. We could see the five aggregates. We could understand that the only thing that doesn't want to die is the illusion of self. If you ask your right leg if it's afraid to die, it will remain silent. It will not say anything. If you ask your thumb if it's afraid to die, your thumb will not say anything. Our body doesn't know what life and death is. Our body just sort of is stimulated and does a lot of stuff all the time for no reason of its own, but because we have a consciousness who is directing it. Fascinating. So, when the Buddha died, did the Buddha die? Nobody died. He just never appeared again in the world. And the legacy that he left us is celebrated in the Mahayana tradition in some countries on December 8th, and we call it Bodhi Day, the day the Buddha woke up.